while some of the poor whites of Appalachia laid in the mud with us in Resurrection City, trying to create a full employment economy. There were some blacks up on U Street who said, I'll be glad when the men run them out of town. And that's why when Jesus observed that there were some Jews trying to kill him, and there were some Jews who were standing by, but there were some of the Hellenist Greeks who were against him, and there were some others who would take Saul's stands against him and get information to him. When Jesus found that even some of the barbarians, some of the prisoners, would stand up for him, when Jesus even found that there was a soldier in the Roman army with stripes on his shoulder, a man of the opposite race and the opposite political party, would stand up for him. Y'all know the story of him putting the CIA man on Jesus, calling the centurion soldier. He had a high rank. Jesus was considered a rabble-rouser who was stirring up the people, forcing the people to disrespect the authorities. And they said, we got to get a case on them. That's what they build up on guys like Bobby. Dr. King, that's why they got my phone tapped. And they got a lot of other people's phone tapped. They call it building up the case. It didn't just not start. Because I might say in passing, most of what they heard me say on telephone, I repeat again. And nothing I said on my telephone I'm ashamed of, except sometime when I was unsuccessful. About the only thing I'm disappointed with. Now, let's go on. So anytime y'all hear something like that, say, well, the Reverend done called him again, because he is. I ain't worried about it. Now, so this guy was on Jesus' case, and so one of his disciples came up in Calvin and said, look, Jesus, say, do you notice there's a soldier from the Roman army? So he got on plain clothes. And we know him because we recognized him when Peter and him was down at the castle. We saw him, and he gonna give a report on you. And they got all alarmed. They want to protect you. Jesus said, no, so just relax. Say, if he keep on following us and see what we're doing, say, I want you to watch how truth works. And the soldier, he was taking notes, taking mental notes. And that was a leper that folks wouldn't identify with. And Jesus picked the leper up. That was one of his notes. They were walking down the street, and that was a prostitute. Everybody was ashamed to identify with. And Jesus said, don't laugh at her. He was taking notes. And there were some fellows who were hungry one day.
Yes, sir.
And from the Pharisaic tradition, they would have tried to fast when they were hungry and observe some law. And Jesus began to develop ways to feed them when they were hungry and get them some fish and bread. Man was taking notes. Jesus saw people who had inferiority complexes and told them, don't be no respecter of persons. Say, stand up. And by the time he got through taking these trips and went back, and the Pharisees had the high court and say, we are glad that you're back. Say, because he's still drawing them crowds and still creating them problems and going out on them boats. And say, we can't keep up with him. Say, I know since you've been traveling around with him, you got the case. Yes. Say, but it is a serious meeting, and we're here in the chambers and all the pads, and we have out our legal writs. Where is your document? Yes. Where are your notes, Reverend Wise? You've been traveling with him. You had the assignment. You know that if you have flunked, you're going to be court-martialed. You know if you have succeeded, you're going to be promoted. Where is your assignment? And the soldier said, I don't need no book to tell the story, even though if I wanted to just filibust, I could build it up and impress you. I could talk about how him and his disciples laid around and talked tonight. I could talk about how they organized the crowd. I could talk about the details of his sermon. He said, but just based upon my observation, I could sum it up by saying, I have never heard a man.
Yes, sir.
Speak like this man. Say, I have never heard it.
All right,
sir. A man who could be low enough to identify with a prostitute and high enough to confound philosophers. I ain't heard nothing like it. That's my report. Jesus got the rumor back that the soldier, once he was confronted the truth, even the soldier who's killing in Vietnam will turn around and join the peace movement if he hears the truth.
Yes, sir.
That's what Jesus said in knowing your enemy.
Yes.
Divide them not on Jew and Gentile.
Yes,
divide them not on barbarian and Greek or black and white. Sons of light and sons of darkness. There are some of all kind of people who just want to do what's right. And there are some of all kind of people who just are inclined to do what's wrong. And you will be able to determine who is for light and who is for darkness, not based upon how they look, but based upon how they behave. Know who your enemy is. Our first concern was our having the capacity to analyze our situation well enough to see the great division that have our race separated and that have kept us separated down through the years. In each instance, we've argued that in unity there is strength, and in unity there is power. And yet, though we say that on the one hand, on the other hand, we continue developing reasons and living by splits and divisions. We said that in the slavery time, some of the so-called astute sociologists or even grassroots observers said that our problem is we have house slaves, yard slaves, and field slaves. Now, that is a good observation, and it is a sound analysis, but it does not offer any solution. Nor does it say what you are going to do to break up the division. Do y'all hear what I'm saying? We said that so long as the house slave thought that being in the shade constituted freedom, he was in a bad shape mentally. That as long as the yard slave thought that being in the yard and not in the hot sunshine all day, because in the yard there are some trees. You know, if you ever cut hedges down home, mess around and pick a lot of old plums and blackberries and stuff out in the field or in the yard, peach trees and stuff, you can always clip and get a little shade. You can even eat some of the fruit. So the yard slave has a little better than the field slave, where it is impractical and unscientific to have shade trees in the field. It's just pure hot sunshine. But for whatever reason, so long as the house slave accepted the privilege of a roof over his head, and the yard slave as tree leaves hanging over his, and they were separated from the field slaves who were in the majority, then it meant that the slave master simply had three different forms of slavery, three different levels of slavery. It was not until that they recognized that the common denominator, the numerator, was house, yard, and field. But the denominator was slavery. And until they awakened to that reality, the slave master had a good thing going. But when they respected each other's relative position and developed slave integrity, where the field slaves stopped talking about the house slave, and the house slave stopped snitching on the field slave, recognized their common bond and bind and blight and predicament, then they collected their various forms of slavery and removed themselves and began to riot and rebel and revolt. And slavery became not only too expensive, but slavery became too dangerous, because the slaves wouldn't take it anymore. You might get hit in the field with a hoe by a field slave. But you might be sleeping in the yard, slave, allow some wasps and some hornets to fly through your window. And the house slave might put some poison in your food. But all of them wanted to break up slavery. So some people say we're making progress. Well, we had three levels then. Now I say we got five. Super black, black, bourgeois, Negro, and nigger. So everybody's trying to run around and discover which one of the five groups he gonna join. So the black consumer say, I'm not gonna support the black producer, because he's a Negro. Black producer said, well, I'm not going to relate as I should to the black consumer, because they just accept what white folks say about us. They are niggers. Preacher said, I'm not going to relate to the teacher. They are bourgeois. They are educated fools. Then the teacher says, the preacher, he is an old traditional Negro chicken eater, and he is not concerned. He's not concerned about anybody except himself. But whatever he does, he's still in slavery. Preacher, professor, pimp, punk, PhD, all the P's still in slavery. Now, so we dwell a little bit on stop using labels to separate us. Then the next week we said, know who your enemy is. Don't be afraid to fight the mayor and then accuse one of the black men who got a position with the mayor, who makes no decisions, as being responsible for the mayor not responding to the black community. Don't say we are not educated because of black teachers, or we are not well because of black doctors. We don't have justice because of black lawyers. Black lawyers didn't set up the bar of law. Black lawyers didn't set up a system where we would be tried by people other than our peers. Middle class black America didn't set up slavery, and didn't profit from it. Black teachers are not the reason why our children get poor education. No group of black men anywhere ever in the history of this country set up a draft system to kill your boys and your husband and your uncles. No group of black men took your tax money to send 3 men to the moon while our father and men are hungry. I'm just saying that to say, know who your enemy is. Wherever you listen, pull out a quarter and a dime. 25 cents piece and a dime. Y'all too. Quarter and a dime. I'm not really a teacher, but I can if I have to. Necessity is the mother of invention, I told y'all. Oh, you want poverty people up here putting out these. I didn't say a $10 bill and a $25 bill. I said a quarter, Mary, and a dime. All these poor people, campaign people up here putting out all this money. Said y'all was stealing that money. All right, now let's go on. We are in Chicago a little better than 25% of the population. That's what this quarter is. We are a little better than 25% of the population. We live on less than 10% of the land. Follow me now.
All right.
Now, what you must do is to try to fit the quarter on the dime. I want y'all to follow me now. It's gonna get serious in a minute. Try to fit the quarter on the dime. Try to fit it. Figure out how you can do it. One of y'all get smart enough to figure it out, jump up and tell it. You got a position on how you put this quarter on this dime? Do what to it? Well, you can't stick all black folks up on top of each other. You got to fit on it. I didn't say stick it on the dime. I say fit it on the dime. That's what the whites are trying to do. They're trying to stick us on the dime. They got to fit us on the dime. Now, turn it over so you can look at the dime. Those people that are on the dime live in the ghetto. Those that are on the outer edges survive by pulling on to those who are living to keep from falling over. Those who can't get on the dime, that's where jobs are. They're unemployed, which means that the ghetto by definition has a certain periphery of people unemployed. They're cut out of participation. God wasn't no fool when he made men in proportion to land. He's not overstocked his earth with men. It ain't no accident that 30,000 people per square mile live in the black community and 3,000 per square mile live in the white community, which means in the white community you got more land than people, and the premium is on the man and not on the land. And in the black community you got more people than property, and therefore the premium is on the property and not on the man. In the white community, you defend white folk. In the black community, you defend property. It's no accident. Listen. Listen. Think about the people who can't get on the dime. Can't get a job. They can't get medicine. They can't get education. They can't get food.
They can't even get social respect because unhealthy and unemployed and disgusted, even the people who represent the dime despair and give up on them. That becomes the class schism in the ghetto. But you must never forget that nobody on the dime set up the quarter dime relationship. That's why arguing about the bourgeoisie over and against the lower class is invalid. Nobody black set up the quarter or the dime. There are two ways to get people on this dime. One, you can cut the quarter off. You can kill it. Cut it off. Do war. You can lock it up. 65 at a time. Observe the phenomena. Reason I can't get so mad at the black police, they don't even understand how they're being used to perpetuate the quarter dime relationship. Job by definition, they will never solve the problem because their job is to lock up men who are cut to kill. Their job is to make men stand up whose lives by definition is one of falling. Y'all gonna hear what I'm saying? Part of the class that makes $9,000 to $10,000 a year, which is a decent salary, is the police group. And the young man who don't want to go to the army or goes and come back, work at the post office, or drive a truck, do a few other things. The police job is a good job, pay-wise. Some of the black cat rather than be on welfare, if he can be a police, make $9,000 or $10,000, $5,000 or $6,000 on the side, pretty good game. But the responsibility, here's what I'm talking, I'm not trying to put anybody down. I appreciate the dilemma of black police. Now, I know there's a difference between black and white police. Even though they may do the same thing, their motivation is different. White police whips you because he's racist. The black police whips you because he has to impress the racist to keep his job. And that's why we shouldn't have any white police on the island. Different now. Black police and the white police together. White police whip you because he enjoys doing it. If the black police doesn't arrest a certain amount of black people, if he doesn't get a reputation as a head whipper, he cannot be trusted. You know a man can be trusted because you can say, he didn't whip a bunch of black folks. So you know he's just.
All right.
But y'all don't understand that. You can get these people on the dime by cutting it off, the quarter, or you can bend it. Bend it. Bend it, pervert it. Make it cease to be a quarter. Mess it up where it won't fit in machine. Mess it up where it won't spin. Listen to me. Send it to school, yeah, 12 years, but give it 6 years worth of education. Send it to the hospital, yeah, but don't give it full treatment. Give it a job, yeah, minimum wage. Pervert it. But guess what happens? When the quarter is bent over on the sides, it humps up in the middle, and that's the high rises. That's the high rises when it is bent over and it comes up in the middle. That's why the open housing drive was valid. Not because of a desire to live next door to whites, but because, number one, we're too congested. 12,000 white folks stayed in Kenwood in 1947, and now 74,000 black people stay in the same area. Apartment for 3, now apartment for 12. Therefore, if those people want to move across Ashland, what is so divine about Ashland Avenue, except they want to keep us hemmed in and keep a base of cheap labor? And I challenge every black leader to know that no black man, even those that defend the situation, are responsible for putting it together. which is my last point. Not only must you defend the poor and build your case, you must develop your strategy to deliver them. That involves fighting, that involves going to war, out of the hands of the wicked. And didn't you say, wake them up, Berea? Didn't you say, pray to them and inspire them out of the hands of the wicked? Now, the difference between a sociologist and a theologian, you can identify the wicked just by looking at where people live and watching the institutions. What makes a man, not only does he see the wicked, but he calls the wicked wicked to the wicked man's face.